It is 7 o'clock in the Midwest, and this is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week for Monday, March 1st. I'm Dennis Hart. Welcome to another in our series of live programs in this time slot that will explore and analyze what's going on at Iowa's state capital, legislation that's in the works, legislation that could be in the works, and what it all means for all of us. As always, I'm joined by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, good evening, as always, and I mean this, it is great to be with you again on this Monday night.
Oh, great to be here, Dennis. Thank you.
It has been another hectic week in the Iowa State Legislature, as you and I talked just a few minutes before airtime, almost too much to keep up with, but we're going to try tonight, starting with the Iowa House and Senate both passing a bill last week giving state residents less time to cast ballots either early or on Election Day. Now, that bill was fast-tracked through the legislature in less than 2 weeks on a party-line vote, Republicans in favor, Democrats opposed. It has a whole lot of layers that we have to unpeel tonight, so let's start. The overview is the bill places new limits on virtually every voting method. So start with voters having less time, Laura, to request an absentee ballot.
Yes, just from beginning to end, it's less convenient for voters. So in current law, says that Iowans can start requesting absentee ballots 120 days before the election. So for a general election, that's in early July. That will change to 70 days. So late August would be the first time you could submit an absentee ballot request form to your county auditor. But the auditors won't be able to mail the ballots out to anyone until 20 days before the election. Under current law, it's 29 days. And until 2017, it used to be 40 days. So we used to have really quite a lot longer to get those ballots.
Which means there's going to be less time to vote early in person as well.
Yes, early voting in person is going to be starting 20 days before the election instead of 29 before. And they really, like I said, they shaved off at every stage of the game. So the auditors, the first day they could mail a ballot to anyone would be 20 days before the election. And also the last day they could mail a ballot to anyone is going to move to 15 days before the election. Under current law, it's 10 days. So that means, for instance, if they mail your ballot to you 20 days before the election, let's say it takes 4 or 5 days to get to you in the mail, it sits on your table for a day or two, and then when you're filling it out, you make a mistake. In the past, you could call your county auditor and say, I made a mistake on my ballot, and they could mail you a new ballot packet. Well, now it's very likely that there's not going to be time for the county auditors to mail replacement ballots to anyone. And then furthermore, compounding the problem for people who vote by mail, now they're setting a time certain for ballots must be received by Election Day, 8 p.m. on Election Day, whereas under current law, if you mail it at least the day before the election, it could arrive up to 6 days afterwards and still be counted with a valid postmark proving that you mailed it on time. So, you know, you could get your ballot 12 days before the election, you could mail it 10 days before the election. And if it doesn't get there in time by Election Day, your vote's just not going to count. And that's something that could affect people like snowbirds who spend the winter in warmer climates, Iowans who are attending out-of-state universities or colleges. So it's something that could be a real problem for a lot of people.
Do we have any idea how many ballots, talking about this particular point, did arrive after 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock on election night last year? How many ballots were counted after they got there late, if you will, which would be illegal now? It's going to be illegal. But how many ballots came in after election night?
In the 2020 general election, it was about 6,500 ballots, according to the Democratic legislative staff. Now, of course, people may adjust their behavior with a new law. So it might be less than 6,500 ballots. And of course, 2022 will be a midterm election with lower turnout generally than a presidential year. But it's still, I expect that thousands of people who mail their ballots on time will end up not having their votes count because of this particular provision. And then, again, compounding the problem, some people don't like to trust the mail, so they hand deliver or have somebody else hand deliver their absentee ballot for them after they filled it out. That's going to become more difficult as well under the new law.
Explain that, if you will. That was my next question. The bill does make it more difficult for people to hand deliver the ballots because it limits who can hand deliver those ballots.
That's right. So currently, you can ask anybody to hand deliver your ballot. You can ask a friend or neighbor, This came up at the public hearing that a lot of people, elderly people who live alone, they might have a friend from church. They might ask the person who delivers their Meals on Wheels. Often Democratic Party, either campaign volunteers or local county Democratic Party volunteers, organize what they call ballot chase. So they call the people who requested ballots but haven't returned them and then offer to send somebody over to their house to pick up the completed ballot and hand deliver it to the auditor. Under the new law, the only people who could hand deliver your ballot would be the voter, somebody living in the voter's household, or an immediate family member. So that means not like a niece or a cousin or an aunt. And it says caretaker, and it doesn't define what caretaker is, but caretaker elsewhere in Iowa code is defined as someone who's like more of a guardian role. So it wouldn't just be any person who's your friend. And this is something that really several Democrats during the debate thought that this might be vulnerable to a legal challenge in court. I'm not sure I've heard, I've reached out to several legal law professors, and they have differing views on whether a court would find this to be too constraining. But to say that a voter can't designate somebody, a trusted friend or neighbor, to deliver a ballot is really a difficult hurdle for people who live alone or people who have a physical disability or just lack transportation for some other reason. And then ballot drop boxes are limited to one per county, no matter how large the county is. So in some of the larger counties, it might be a 30-minute drive or longer to get to where the county auditor's office is to get to the only drop box. So that is also going to make it a problem.
And the reason for that is that this bill does limit county auditors. They no longer can establish satellite voting sites, which have become very common in virtually every state across the country.
Yes. The members of the public can still petition for satellite voting sites. And I expect that what we'll see is in places like Story County or Polk County, where there are well-organized Democratic county parties, they probably will go ahead and petition and try to get a lot of satellite voting set up, but it probably won't be to the extent that we've seen in recent elections. And those satellite voting locations are very popular in my area, in the suburbs of Des Moines. I mean, people like being able to go to the public library or the community center and not have to drive downtown and fight for parking and wait in line at the county elections office. So that is going to be, I think, another issue. I mean, typically, I would say if you're afraid of your mailed ballot not getting back on time, I would advise people to vote early in person. But now the Iowans will have fewer days to vote early in person, and it could be harder to get a satellite voting location established near you.
And I think to go back to that point you made a couple of minutes ago about the fact that even if folks get it in the mail, their ballots in the mail 3-4 days ahead of time, if it's not there by 8 o'clock on election night, it will not be counted.
Yeah, I can't overstate how much of a problem this is going to be for people, particularly, like I said, people who live far away. And in rural areas, it's actually going to hurt rural areas more. I mean, I live in town. If I mail something to the Polk County Auditor's Office in Des Moines, it's fairly likely to get there within 2 or 3 days. But people living in rural Iowa, in the smaller counties, often their mail goes to another county's processing center, and then it comes back to their county. So even if, let's say, you know, that I live in Adams County and I just want to mail it to the Adams County Elections Office, which might be 15 miles away from my house, that letter is going to go all the way to Des Moines to be processed, and then it's going to go all the way back to Adams County. And this was an issue in the 2018 election. There was a very close Iowa House race where the Republican was declared the winner by 9 votes, and there were 29 absentee ballots that people had mailed on time but that arrived after election day that were not open because of a lack of a certain kind of postmark. But in any case, that the issue was that people in Winnesheek County had mailed these ballots and they had gone all the way to Waterloo and then all the way back to Decorah, to the county auditor. So, I mean, multiply that by 99 counties, and there are just going to be a lot of people who do everything right and try to mail their ballot, and just it ends up not getting counted. So I am going to be encouraging people not to vote by mail unless they just literally have no other option. I mean, if anyone can somehow get a ride to an early voting location to vote in person, I think that's much safer if you want to make sure that your vote's going to count.
But they're going to have to get there a little bit earlier than they might, because this bill also makes polls close earlier than they have on election night.
That's right. And it doesn't help people like snowbirds who've already gone down to Florida or Arizona for the winter. They have no choice but to vote by mail. But yes, this was a surprise. So the bill was introduced on a Tuesday and final passage was the following Wednesday. But then there were certain provisions that they introduced just on the Tuesday, a week after the original bill was published. And one of those was this changing the poll closing time from 9 p.m. to 8 p.m. for state and federal elections. That was not part of the original bill. And also this issue of the ballots having to arrive by election day, that was not part of the original bill. That was something that the Senate Republicans added on the Tuesday, last Tuesday, 7 days after the bill was published. And then they, you know, within hours of that amendment being published, they passed it. So, you know, again, some people will adjust their behavior. So people might be able to make plans to go vote early. But what several of the Democrats pointed out in the House debate is that we have a lot of people don't work a 9-to-5 work schedule. They work different shifts and it might be hard. Some people do need to vote after 8 p.m. And so now those people are going to be out of luck. And so that's, it's hard to say exactly how many people will be affected by that. But I think it's, you know, not a negligible number. I mean, I certainly think it could be in the hundreds of people.
With all of this going on now, the bill also targets county auditors who could face criminal charges for disobeying state law or failing to follow state guidance. Now, this is aimed at two or three county auditors, isn't it?
It is. And one of the Democrats in the Iowa House, Christina Bohannon, she's a law professor at the University of Iowa, and she raised a point that she thought that some of this language targeting auditors might be unconstitutionally vague. So it'll be interesting to see if any of the auditors go to court over this. But it places the auditors under the direct supervision of the Iowa Secretary of State, for one thing, which is different. Under current law, the county auditors have certain home rule powers, just like other county officials under the Iowa Constitution. And this really makes them subordinate to the Secretary of State. And it also kind of makes the Secretary of State like judge and jury. If he deems that the auditor's done something wrong, he can issue a technical infraction and fine them up to $10,000. So, I mean, that's a big deal. And he can refer to either a county attorney or the Iowa Attorney General's office for a criminal investigation. They would be required to at least conduct some kind of criminal investigation. So it's really chilling. And several of the auditors raised a concern that it could cause people to quit. Their experienced election staff might quit rather than run the risk that the Secretary of State on a vendetta would fine them thousands of dollars. And then, of course, if they have to hire inexperienced staff in the elections office, that increases the chance of people making mistakes.
When I mentioned two or three county auditors, unpack that. You know what I'm talking about in terms of what they did during the last election.
Yes. Yeah, so the auditors in Johnson County, which is Iowa City area, Linn County, which is Cedar Rapids, and Woodbury County, which is the Sioux City area. They sent out absentee ballot request forms to everyone in their county, all the registered voters, and they pre-filled them out with the voter's information so that the voter just had to sign it, date it, and send it back in to get the absentee ballot. And the intention of the state legislators was, the Republican legislators, that is, was to say that the voter had to supply all of this information and that the auditors could only send blank absentee ballot request forms. And it was really it wasn't as clear-cut a legal issue as some people make it sound. I mean, this case got up to the Iowa Supreme Court, and it was a 4-3 decision against what the auditors did. But there were three Iowa Supreme Court justices who would not have upheld this law. But in any case, the upshot of it is that the Republicans are saying these three county auditors broke the law. They flagrantly violated the law. They felt that they had this home rule authority and that the Secretary of State had not gone through the rulemaking process. You know, he had issued this order saying they had to send blank absentee ballot request forms, but he hadn't gone through any rulemaking process. So they felt that his order was, in a sense, invalid. So in any case, I mean, it was a legal dispute. But I mean, I found it kind of amusing to listen to the debate and the thunderous condemnation of the auditors. In 2016, this is an issue that didn't get enough attention, I think. The Dallas County auditor, who happened to be a Republican — these other county auditors last year were all Democrats — the Dallas County auditor's staff made a mistake that led to about 5,800 absentee ballots never being counted. They were just like put in a box and they were never processed after the election. And so that was literally 5,800 and some residents of Dallas County who voted and who were disenfranchised by mistakes by the county auditor. And nothing happened. I mean, there was a letter was sent issuing a technical infraction, but no one was fined. No one proposed any punitive legislation targeting county auditors. And this was, you know, really a huge mistake with big consequences for voters compared to last year. You know, there weren't really any consequences. I mean, the courts ruled that these absentee ballot request forms that were pre-filled weren't valid. And so the auditors sent out new forms that were blank. So there, you know, there was really no substantive harm done. There's no claim that anyone illegally or improperly voted due to what happened. And nobody was disenfranchised due to what happened. And yet, you know, they are now bringing down the hammer with this new law.
Let's take a quick break while we tell people that it is 16 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock on this Monday night, and you are listening to KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart, along with Laura Bellin. We are talking about what's going on at the state legislature. And the bill that we're talking about right now is one that has great ramifications for voting in the next years in Iowa. And to do one more example of the bill, it says that the Secretary of State can send ballot request forms to voters only now with legislative permission.
Yes, and only if the governor has declared a public health emergency, which, you know, let's all hope that we never see another one of these pandemics in our lifetime. So, I mean, it's really hard to fathom why they would say that the legislature can't direct or that the Secretary of State can't send voters absentee ballot request forms. I mean, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of voters returned those absentee ballot request forms they got from the Secretary of State's office. Again, I mean, there's no harm done for that practice. He was using the voter list that his own office maintains. And so it's hard to understand, you know, what is the benefit to the public of making it harder for people to get absentee ballot request forms. One thing that they did change in the draft before the final passage, the original bill said that the county auditors cannot send anyone an absentee ballot request form under any circumstances. And they changed that to say that county auditors now, upon request, they can send a voter a request form. So that means if somebody who doesn't have a printer at home calls the office and their county elections office and says, please send me an absentee ballot request form, they can mail that person a form, but they can't just do a blanket mailing to everyone. And those were very popular and those were very widely used in the last couple of elections. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a drop in turnout in 2022, partly related to making it more difficult for people to request a ballot.
Iowa Democrats are calling this voter suppression. Republicans say it's about improving the election process. But as you know, last week, Republican State Senator Jim Carlin said, and I'm using his words, many of us in my caucus and the Republican caucus believe the election was stolen. Now, President Trump won. Former President Trump won Iowa. The New York Times, Los Angeles Times have both done stories this weekend mentioning Iowa in their overview of what's happening here, and they call it part of a national battle over voting. Republican legislatures in 42 other states besides Iowa are working to restrict certain aspects of voting. So is this all about Republicans, again, trying to make sure, and this, I guess, requires some analysis, some nonpartisan analysis. It appears they're trying to cut down the number of people voting because they think too many people are voting, the wrong type of people.
That's how it looks to me. And they're targeting early voting, which we've seen the last few elections that Democrats in Iowa are more likely to vote early. I mean, I think it's very hard to argue that any of these proposals would be on the table if Republicans voted early in much larger numbers than Democrats. But there was a little bit of a mixed messaging last week because, as you said, State Senator Jim Carlin from the Sioux City area, he got up there and said, we think the election is stolen and this is going to restore integrity. And then the floor manager in the Iowa House, Bobby Kaufman, said, this bill isn't about fraud. We're just trying to make the process better. So, but there's really no evidence of any fraud problem. And in fact, after the election, even the people who were promoting Trump's big lie about a stolen election, even those people in Iowa were saying, well, we had a very good election in Iowa. We didn't have any irregularities and we didn't have any illegal votes, but it was just in some of these other states that Biden won. But now, nobody has pointed to any problems related to election administration in Iowa, and yet it's going to become so much harder to vote. So it's really, it's hard to see this as anything other than trying to reduce turnout from groups that lean toward Democratic candidates?
Well, as I'm going to quote the New York Times, they called all of this, including Iowa, what's going on in Iowa, in their words, extraordinary efforts to change the rules of voting and representation. And that is what it appears to be across the country.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I mean, this bill moved very, very quickly. I mean, it's fairly rare for any bill really to just be published and then 8 days later be passed in both chambers, but particularly a far reaching bill that was dozens of pages long. I mean, this is very far outside the norm. This has been done for a handful of bills in the last 5 years, but it's not the normal legislative process at all.
If it sounds as if we're spending a lot of time on this, we are, because this is important to every listener and every voter in Iowa. But there are other things going on, and we have a few minutes left to talk about them. It's been a busy week. Yes. You've been following the action involving the state's redistricting commission. What's the latest on that?
Well, the temporary redistricting advisory commission had its second meeting this afternoon. There are four members who have already been appointed, two Democrats and two Republicans, and they need to elect a fifth member who's going to chair the commission. That was on the agenda today, but they didn't finalize that. They talked about a few possible candidates, and they're going to come back to that next week. But the Legislative Services Agency, which is the nonpartisan organization that usually draws the maps, so the representative from there talked a little bit more about this deadline issue that the Census Bureau is probably not going to send the states any data until September. And the Iowa Constitution says that the legislature has to approve new maps for the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate by September 1st. And if those maps aren't enacted by September 15th, the Iowa Supreme Court takes over the process. So we still don't really know how the Iowa Supreme Court will approach this. They haven't shed any light on it. But one thing that came out today is that this deadline in the state constitution doesn't apply to the congressional map. It only applies to the state legislative map. So you could see those processes separated for the first time, where the Supreme Court could take over the process of drawing of state legislative maps, whereas we could go through more of a normal process, just delayed, for drawing the congressional maps. And I don't really know how that would work, because usually they start with the congressional maps and work down from that. So we'll have to see. But so far, no sign of Republicans trying to change the law to get around this deadline issue. So I'll just keep an eye out for that. I haven't seen any bills introduced on that.
A House bill would cut jobless benefits for workers and reduce dependent benefits for people with large families. Talk about that one.
This is a tough one, and this is definitely a live wire. It's through committees in both the House and the Senate, which means that it's eligible for debate anytime the rest of this year. So there are several pieces to it. It's something that's promoted by the Iowa Workforce Development Agency and several major business groups. The first part is that people would have a 1 week delay before they received any unemployment benefits at all. That would be everybody. Everybody who lost a job and filed for unemployment would have to wait one additional week before you could start collecting. And it's hard to understand really the justification for that, but that's part of it. Another issue is that they are reducing the number of dependents. So right now, if you have up to four kids, I mean, you can claim each of your children as a dependent, and that would slightly increase your unemployment benefit. In the future, you'll be able to claim just one dependent. So whether you have one child or six children, you get the same amount of money. So it's going to reduce unemployment benefits for people with more than one child. There in the committees, in one of the committees, a Democrat proposed an amendment that said, well, let's at least not tax unemployment benefits, because a lot of people don't realize this. In Iowa, unemployment benefits are taxable income. And the person who was leading the subcommittee said to the committee, said, well, we don't have money in the budget to do that, to make unemployment benefits not subject to taxation. But somehow we have money in the budget to do a lot of other things. So this is one. It hasn't been scheduled for debate in the House or the Senate yet, but it seems to have some momentum. And I think that it's something. I mean, we're far, far below the employment level of before the pandemic. So there are still many more unemployed Iowans than there were at any time in the past 10 years. And so this bill would really affect a lot of people if it goes through.
We have about 5 minutes left, so we have a few more things to talk about, many more things, but we only have time for a few. Among them, the Senate has passed a bill, the state Senate, requiring Iowans to undergo added verification steps to receive food stamps and other benefits.
This is something, there's a state senator named Jason Schultz from Western Iowa, and he has been focused on this for years now. He just wants to adopt systems like they've had in Arkansas and Kentucky and maybe some other states that make people jump through more hoops to stay on food assistance, Medicaid rolls. And we've seen from research that they've done in those other states that these bills end up kicking about 1 in 6 Medicaid recipients off the rolls. And these are people who are eligible, but they just don't end up going through all the hoops. And this in the last couple of years, similar bills passed the Senate and they died in committee in the House. So that'll be the big question. It's alive for now, but will the House move it forward or will it die in a House committee like it did last year? The Iowa Department of Human Services does not support this bill. They testified during the subcommittee that they are working with the federal government to get some kind of free computer upgrade that would allow them to improve their verification processes, whereas this bill would require the state to contract with some third-party vendor on some kind of new computer verification system. So it would actually require more spending by the state on the computer system, then it would also require more spending by the state on personnel in the Department of Human Services to administer the system. And the upshot would be a certain percentage of people who are eligible for food assistance or childcare assistance or Medicaid in particular would end up losing those benefits. So this is something that a lot of groups, a very broad coalition of groups, oppose this bill. And we'll see if they can be as successful in the Iowa House as they were the last couple of years in keeping that from coming out of committee.
Governor Reynolds signed into law last week a 2.4% increase in per pupil state aid for Iowa's K through 12 schools. Legislature had previously passed that. Talk briefly about that one.
Yes, well, this was another issue where, you know, a lot of Democrats were frustrated that the state wasn't dipping into surplus funds to increase the school funding. This is the 10th year in a row that the increase in state funding for schools has been below the rate of inflation for school districts. So a 2.4% increase, the governor had asked for 2.5%. It was close to what the governor asked for, but a lot of representatives of the school districts will tell you that their costs go up by about 3.5% or 4% a year. And many of those costs are fixed. They can't do anything about it, like certain salary increases that go into effect every year. So when they get only a 2.5% state budget increase, they either have to increase local property taxes or they have to cut staff or cut programs to make up for the rising costs in other areas. So that's going to be something dozens of school districts might be in a position where they are looking at property tax increases. And again, in this economy, it's really not a great time to raise people's property taxes.
Yeah. We have about a minute. The legislative funnel is coming up. You and I have talked about it. Would you explain to our listeners what the funnel is and what it means?
The funnel applies to any bill that's not related to taxation or the budget. And it means that by the end of the 8th week, which is going to be this coming Friday, any bill to remain alive that's not related to taxation or budget has to be through at least one committee in either the House or the Senate. So any bill that hasn't cleared one committee by this Friday is going to be dead unless it's a tax or budget bill. Now, the caveat to that is that sometimes bills that die in the first funnel are attached to other legislation later, especially if leaders want that. So I would say never say that something is entirely dead, but usually bills that don't make it through that funnel are not going to be considered again during this year.
And what do you see coming up on the legislative agenda the next 4 days?
Well, many committees meeting trying to get those bills through, several bills related to guns, trying to get them through committee in time, some other bills possibly related to employment and possibly related to LGBTQ rights, or at least infringement on LGBTQ rights. There's a rush to get lots of bills through committee by this deadline this Friday.
And you will be following all of it, and you and I will be back next Monday night.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Laura, thank you so very much. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. Laura Bellin and I will be back here, as I said, next Monday night live at 7 o'clock. That's right. Not even we know what we're going to say until we get on the air, with a look at what makes news in the Iowa State Legislature this week and what it means for all of us. We want to thank you for the privilege of your time tonight. We know that you have other things to do, and we're quite happy that you have spent this half hour with us. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'm speaking for Laura Bellin, though she can certainly speak for herself. In fact, Laura, why don't you say goodnight for us?
Well, thank you for listening to everybody. I really appreciate it.